And you're listening to Unusual Sources, normally on 93.3 CFMU. That is on the FM dial, and it's also at CFMU.ca, our online streaming service. This is a special broadcast with Jeff Halper that we're going to be getting out to mailing lists in Hamilton and the region, because as you probably know, Jeff Halper is coming to Hamilton on Tuesday, July 2nd. And that's going to be for his talk, which is entitled From Genocide in Gaza to Decolonizing Palestine, Moving Towards a Democratic State for All Between the River and the Sea. So we're very fortunate to have Jeff Halper with us. So Jeff, thanks very much for being on the program today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I know you're an extremely busy guy. You've got all these interviews and stops and special dinners and everything on your whole tour there. So
right.
I'm glad we could catch you at least for a time slot. Now, people have been notified about your event in the city, and we were expecting a turnout of some sort at the Unitarian Church of Hamilton at 170 Dundurn Street South on the upcoming Tuesday. It's kind of a mouthful, this whole event. I mean, the title is kind of long. That's our fault, I suppose. But your book has a more succinct title. It's called Decolonizing Israel, Liberating Palestine. And that's pretty straightforward. There's been a few blurbs about your book that have been released. So a lot of the event is kind of a launch of the book. It's a discussion of the main themes. Now, I know that the occupation itself, which you've been documenting and resisting for a long time, is going to be a major aspect of the book. The occupation of Palestine, what it means, how it's affected people. What are the other aspects, though? I mean, if you were to talk about the major themes beyond the occupation itself, what would you say are the major elements of the book?
Well, I mean, one of the reasons why the title of my talk is so long is that there are really two major issues going on at the same time today in terms of Palestine. One is the immediate, of course, and that's the genocide that's ongoing in Gaza. Even today, there was a massacre in the Jabalia refugee camp. So this is an ongoing genocide that is also happening in the West Bank in terms of ethnic cleansing, in terms of attacks on the Jenin and Tul Karm refugee camps by conventional military forces of Israel. So that, you know, we can't at all go on with the conversation about the political future of Palestine and Israel without referring to Gaza. So first of all, I sort of acknowledge that. Because, you know, we can't just pretend it's not happening. And that's where the Gaza part is. I'm not going to get into it too much, but we do have to refer to it. And I bring it in a little bit. But the main part of my discussion has to do with the future. Where are we going? How do we get out of this whole situation? And that's where I'm presenting the program of the organization I'm a part of called the One Democratic State Campaign, which is a Palestinian-led organization that has Israeli Jews involved, like me, that basically says, Palestine has been colonized by Zionism. You know, Israel, I mean, will always say it's a Zionist state. That's the whole essence of Israel, which means it's a Jewish state. But how did it become a Jewish state? That today, with the settlements, is a state between the Mediterranean and the Jordan River. It's taken over all of historic Palestine. How did that happen? It didn't happen by chance. It happened because Zionism intended to take over Palestine. That was the purpose of it. And that's why we call it a settler colonial movement. The idea was from the very beginning, and the Zionists were very upfront about it, and still are. And that is that we consider this our country. It's the land of Israel. It belongs to the Jews. And then you've got this whole biblical narrative about it. And we're going to come back and we're going to retake it. And we're going to dispossess the Palestinians that have no rights to be here anyway. We're going to take their land and we are going to transform Palestine into Israel. We're going to transform an Arab country into a Jewish country. And so, obviously, the solutions that have been proposed, like a two-state solution or ending the occupation, are ridiculous because the entire country has been colonized. You have 750,000 Palestinians living in the West Bank and East Jerusalem that's supposed to be the territory of the little tiny Palestinian state on 22% of historic Palestine. So the colonization has been completed. There is no place for a two-state solution. And even if a Palestinian state would be exactly like a South African Bantustan. You know, South Africa set up, 11 little Bantustan states like Transkei, if we remember that, and all kinds of these little weird places, called them states. Each one of these little enclaves had a president and all of that stuff, never recognized by the international community. But that was how South Africa was able to take 89% of South Africa, the whites, and reduce the blacks to these Bantustans in apartheid, and in that way claim that, you know, there's a white South African state, and the blacks have their own self-determination in their own states that were on 11% of South African land. It's exactly what Israel is doing. Israel wants to take the entire country and then lock the Palestinians, who are the majority population, by the way, in the country, into little tiny enclaves on 15% of historic Palestine. So that's unacceptable. Apartheid is unacceptable. The only other alternative is to say the entire country should be one democratic state, which shouldn't be such a revolutionary idea for Canadians. In other words, it can't be a Jewish state. It can't be a Palestinian state. It can't be a state that belongs to any group. It has to be a state that belongs to all its citizens, because, it can't be a Jewish state because most of the people aren't Jewish. So, you know, apartheid is built into Zionism. It's built into Israel. And so the only way out is to say we're inventing a new state. We can call it Palestine Israel. We can call it Orangeville. I don't know what we're going to call it. It's a state of all its citizens. And then within that state, you have Palestinians living. You have Israelis living. They can continue to have their cultures and their communities and everything else. But they're living within a new civil state with a new young generation that can then share the state, share a life, and get on, without conflict. That's the only way out. And that's the political plan that I'm trying to explain to people and present to people, as a way out of this terrible situation that we're in today of genocide and apartheid.
Well, I'm wondering if it was difficult for you to come to this realization or point of view, because, in Jewish communities, there is often this discussion that involves much hand-wringing and gnashing of teeth, which is, how can we have our Zionist settler state, but also have human rights and, decent conditions right for Palestinians? So, how did you get through all that?
Well, simply by, first of all, I'm an anthropologist, so I have academic training and analysis. So I if you're intellectually honest and you're really looking at the issues and you're able to study them and you read books and you talk to people and you live there, and you're generally open to discovering new ideas and new realities and so on. If you're intellectually open and honest, you have to come to the conclusion that Zionism does not work. It was a great idea on paper. Don't forget, this is in the last part of the 19th century. At that time, colonialism was fine. You had a British Empire. You had a French Empire. Empires were fine. Colonialism was fine. Native populations had no rights. There was no concept of human rights. There was certainly no concept of self-determination that only came about in World War I. So this was a whole different era. But at the same time, Zionism never represented the Jewish people. At the best, Zionism represented 3% of the Jewish people in its early years. So we can't say that this is Judaism. This is a particular nationalist minority version of Judaism, That said, we have to have our own state in the land of Israel. The vast majority of Jews, including today, don't accept that. You know, if you ask Canadian Jews, as fervent Zionists as they might be, what is your national identity? They're going to tell you without any hesitation, Canadian. That's who I am. That's my passport. You know, I wish Israel well, but I'm not an Israeli. I might be. So that this whole idea that Zionism somehow represents the Jews, or if you don't have Zionism, the Jews are in danger, is ridiculous. So the idea that then you can come into a country like Palestine that has a population of farmers, of people that own land, that have been there for millennia, you know, a country, a peopled country, and say, well, this is now our country. This is a Jewish country. We're coming back. We were here 2,000 years ago, you know, and now it's ours. Get out. I mean, that isn't reasonable. It's unjust. And certainly it's not something that Jews anywhere can really support. Certainly not Canadian Jews, I would think. So that, and it had nothing to do with Jewish survival. You know, Jews tried very much in the Holocaust and after to go west. So if they were forced to go to Palestine, it was only because Western countries like Canada and the United States refused to accept them. So that, you know, they could have come to Palestine anyway, but they could have come as immigrants, saying, we want to come to Palestine. We see it as our homeland, or at least it's a refuge. The Palestinians would not have objected to that. What the Palestinians objected to was that they were coming with the intention of taking over their country, not of finding refuge in their country. They had no respect for the local population, and obviously, the Palestinians were not going to accept their own displacement. So from that point of view, you know, Zionism was a colonial movement. And I don't think any Canadian Jew accepts Judaism, of all things, that's based on social justice and human rights and so on, to support a colonial movement of dispossession and genocide of another people. Because the genocide we see in Gaza today didn't begin on October 7th. You know, genocide is built into settler colonialism. You can't come into a country, if you think about it, Theodor Herzl and Ben-Gurion and the Zionists, you can't come into somebody else's country, even if you claim it is your country that's populated, get rid of the people, take their land, redo it as your own country without it being genocide. That's the definition of genocide, the destruction in whole or in part of a people. And that's why Zionism is unsustainable. It's un-Jewish. Jewish survival has nothing to do with it. And if Jews living in Israel want to survive and be there and be accepted and live in peace and security, they have to live with the Palestinian population. And the only way they can do that in peace and equality is in one democratic state where we all have equal citizenship, and the state belongs to its citizens and not to one particular group of people.
Well, that's an interesting point you bring up right there at the end, which is the discussion in Israel itself, given how far Zionism has advanced as a colonial project, as a settler project, and now as a genocidal project. There are people that want to resist this, that want to change policy or change course. Last year on this program, I spoke with Eitan Bronstein, who right. had been launching his book about the Nakba, which, like your book, the subtitle is The Struggle to Decolonize Israel. And he presented on that book last year. And I got the sense from him, or I gathered from him, that these issues are difficult to discuss in Israel right now, with the current war that's being waged more so. But if you're talking about decolonizing Israel, if you're talking about one state solution, if you're talking about Zionism as a colonial project, what is it like to try to bring up and address these issues in the Israeli political scene?
You can't. You can't. You know, Israelis, first of all, you know, say that this country belongs to us. They deny, Israelis deny until today the very existence of a Palestinian people. They say there's a lot of Arabs, but you know, they're all terrorists or they're all against us or whatever. They don't recognize them as a people with rights of their own. And they never have. And in fact, you've taken all their land and you know, half the Palestinians have been displaced as refugees. So you can't talk about it too, with Israelis. They don't care about Arabs. We don't even use the word Palestinians. And, you know, they want an Israel that's from the river to the sea. That's the land of Israel. That's the whole point of what they're doing. So they're not going to entertain an idea of decolonization or of change. Why would they? They own the entire country. They're settling the entire country. They have all the land. They have all the resources. You know, they have the economy. The economy is doing very well. They're living very well. Why would they want to dismantle that? You see, and they don't. And therefore, we have really nothing to say to the Israeli public, and they have nothing to say to us. What we have to do is, you know, the Palestinians themselves have to formulate a political plan of one democratic state of equal rights, which they're beginning to do. Our group is a part of that process, supported by anti-colonial Israeli Jews like me and Eitan. Eitan is a part of our one democratic state group. Ilan Pape and others, there are a lot of Israeli Jews that in fact support us that are anti-colonial. And then to link up with you guys, the international community, in order to cause the collapse of the Israeli apartheid regime, like we did with the apartheid regime in South Africa. And the heartening thing is, in fact, the younger generation of Jews in Canada, in the United States, and other places, has also understood that. They cannot reconcile their commitment to social justice and human rights and democracy, you know, everything that's important to young people today, with the idea of a settler state that's building settlements and committing genocide in Gaza. They don't see that as representing them at all. And so, you know, I think Israel is losing support among Jews abroad and the general public. So I think even if Israelis don't cooperate, I think we can mobilize enough support around the world and finally change government's policies so that we can make the Israeli apartheid regime unsustainable, make it collapse, and then I think Israeli Jews, without choice, but nevertheless, you know, offered equal rights, will then have to or be willing to go through a transition from apartheid and colonialism to democracy. You know, I think the Jews in Israel will do that, not voluntarily, like in South Africa, but they'll do that. And that's, you know, so that we can't depend on Israeli Jews you know, for support. And we can't even talk about this in Israel, to tell you the truth.
It's a regrettable situation, what you're painting in terms of the internal politics of Israel, even though the Palestinian movement broadly, internationally, there's better news coming out of that. It's something you're connected to. It's something people in Canada are connected to. And yeah, Zionism was a tough sell, even starting in the 2000s or so, to young people. And with the wave of activism over the past decade, it's just impossible to sell it to any kind of progressive thinking person, Jewish or otherwise, in the Americas. Before we go, it kind of relates to the domestic political issues. In the United States, there's an election coming up, and this might be a bit out of left field, but given the choice between Biden and Trump, I'm just wondering, as an Israeli, do you feel as though there would be any meaningful or substantial difference between those two in terms of their policy and approach towards Israel-Palestine?
There could be. With Biden, there's no hope at all. Biden is a dyed-in-wool Zionist. He came as Israel is destroying Gaza in November. He came to Israel and said, you don't have to be Jewish to be a Zionist. And he's the one, of course, who's sending the arms, who's enabling the genocide going on today. And so, you know, so there's nothing to look for in Biden. In terms of Trump, there is no policy. Who knows? Trump did tremendous things for Israel when he was president the first time. He annexed the Golan Heights. He annexed East Jerusalem to Israel and moved the American embassy there. He said, settle as much as you want, the West Bank. And he was on the verge of annexation, you know, which he might come back to. On the other hand, Trump is an isolationist. He's an America first guy. He doesn't want to inherit a war in Gaza. I don't think he wants to get sucked into conflicts in the Middle East. And so it could actually go exactly the opposite way. He could say to Netanyahu, leave me alone. You're not going to get any more aid. I'm not giving aid to Ukraine. I'm not giving it to you. I'm not giving it to anybody. He kind of likes dictators, so he could sidle up to Iran. After all, he ended the sanctions against Iran and so on. So it could turn out that Trump would be a much better candidate for progressive people that want an end to Israeli colonialism, because without American support, Israel is absolutely unsustainable. And that could happen with Trump. I mean, he could go both ways. Who knows which way he'll go? Well, if you take a global perspective in terms of the United States itself being a malignant force in the world, which it really has become, Trump would probably be the best option because, you know, the United States, you know, American hegemony might not survive Trump. And that's not a bad thing. It might not be so pleasant for Americans, but for the rest of the world, you know, it might not be, and including Canadians, might not be such a bad thing to have a United States reduced to a, you know, to a second-rate power. So we have to look at it kind of that way.
Trump has been known to make unpredictable and destabilizing foreign policy decisions. From
a global standpoint. The night.
Yes, yes. Well, I know you're really busy and you've got things to attend, but I hope that this will help show people what some of this tour and some of these lectures will be about. It looks like you have a lot to say about why Israel needs to change, how things could go about being changed. Your book and your talk is going to go into that. So thanks very much again for being on the program today.
Okay, thanks for having me on, Brendan. And great. I look forward to seeing everybody in Hamilton.
Yes.